It'll be first and 25.
This is First and 25, the Football Zebras podcast, our 25-minute roundtable discussion on officiating. I'm Ben Ostro, and I'm the founder and editor of the Football Zebras, and we have a full house tonight, joined by senior editor Mark Schultz, editor Cam Philippe, writer Pat Weber, and our writer-analyst Chris Soiber. First thing we'll take a look at this week the Lions tried a bunch of trick plays once their game was well in hand. And one in particular, we had a swing pass slash hook and lateral that was called back for ineligibles downfield. One of them was the lineman who caught the lateral, who ran something that resembled a curl route, but then went too far downfield. So whether it's the Philly special or just a simple tackle eligible, it's incumbent for not only the coach but for the players to make sure they have the play buttoned up. So I'm just going to kind of tee that up for you guys here, and I'll start with you, Cam.
So it's critical in that pregame meeting that you have with the coaches, and that is true at the top at the NFL and all the way trickles down to high school, because we do the same thing. One of the biggest things that's asked by the referee to the coaches is, you have any special plays or formations that you're going to be using today? And that's so, as a crew, we are able to not only prevent ourselves from blowing a quick whistle, but also to make sure we have our heightened awareness for, you know, the specific rules that may govern those formations or plays. On a play like this, if, you know, it had been communicated in pregame that a play like this might be in the cards for the game, you know, generally what we do at the high school level is, once the referee and the umpire usually have that conference, the entire crew will come together, and then they'll decide, or they'll discuss what the coaches have said in terms of if they're running anything special. And then from there, we'll be able to say, all right, we got to make sure there's no ineligibles downfield on this play, or we got to make sure that that ineligible they're lining up in that strange position is not going downfield, or, you know, whatever it may be. It speaks to the crew's heightened awareness. They're always having a heightened awareness, but especially when a trick play may come into effect in the game, to make sure that everything is right, because enforcement of specific procedural things is a lot stricter when it comes to a play that is not necessarily deceptive, but, you know, is working out a little kink or a loophole in the rules. You know, trick plays, we need to have some strong enforcement on our technical matters.
There's an old saying that says, an official's biggest enemy is surprise. And that's why we talk to the coaches beforehand, from high school all the way up to the NFL. Do you plan on running any trick plays? And then the coach can walk us through, first of all, to make sure that it's a legal play, and they almost always are. And then, so we are clued in and we know what to be looking for if they come out and make a certain signal call or send in, you know, again, the special plays and players. And as Cam alluded to, if somebody is running a trick play, it needs to be perfect. There can't be any flinch or twitch. They've got to be, there cannot be five in the backfield. There can't be a little, well, he's close, I'll give it to him. No, you've got to run the play perfectly.
Well, that's a good point that, you know, when you run I like to use the term exotic plays, because it just kind of really covers a real gamut of not only just trick plays, but just things that you just don't see, like a swinging gate or something like that. And they're already designed to get the defense off their rhythm. If there is something that is just slightly out of compliance, that for a standard play would be like, okay, we all know that he's on the line, or he's just a hair short. Now, in this case, when you're a hair short and then everything is not aligning up with what is standard, now that's adding an additional level of confusion. We go to the other end of that. You're privy to this in pregame as a crew. And I'm sure that there's quite a few times where after the play has been run, you've got a lot to explain to the opposing coach. I'll throw it out to you, Ben. I don't know if you've had any experience with that.
Not a ton of trying to have to walk a coach through a play, I don't think. You know, one thing that Mark talked about is it can be really helpful for coaches to bring these plays up to us, and sometimes they do not, because we can walk them through that play to make sure it is legal if it's necessary. I did have one once where, you know, they ran that jet sweep where they flip it forward to the guy getting the ball. You know, in case he drops it, it's not a fumble. But then they ran a double pass out of that. And so we had an incomplete, you know, we had an illegal forward pass for a second forward pass. And the coach wasn't very happy. And I kind of told him, you know, if you had told us about this in the pregame, I could have let you know right then that would be a flag if you ran it.
Yeah, it's a great point, Pat, because I've had to educate a coach, too. He was trying to throw a forward pass to an ineligible number. And he thought because of the behind the line of scrimmage that was okay. And we were like, well, no, it's not okay. And this is a varsity level coach, right? So there is some education that can go on in the pregame. And actually, some of the coaches, you know, sometimes the line of scrimmage official on their side, sometimes they will give you a warning of, hey, here it's coming. Because you might not know from the formation, right? It might just be a typical formation. But sometimes they do clue you in, and you can thankfully with O2Os, you know, you can clue in all your other officials to make sure you are watching for this. And in the Lions game, that wasn't the first one. Before that, they basically reran the play that they got called on last year with Dallas, where Taylor Decker went out and tried to catch a pass. So that crew had their hands full on Sunday with all the trickery that the Lions were running.
Well, and that also throws in these simple ones that, like you said, they on the surface, they just look like a standard play, but there's some little extra wrinkle outside of the norm there. But that's another thing is that you have on the opposite sideline. So let's say that all went through, and now you have the Cowboys sideline saying, well, hey, he was more than a yard downfield. In this case, it was very obvious because it was, you know, we had a stripe involved, and it was more than 2 yards downfield. So it was very clear. But you got a lineman that's going forward, and then he curls back. And if he does go beyond the yard, even by a little bit, you know, there's a rightful complaint that can be lodged from the Cowboys sideline. I mean, have you ever had an earful from a coach? I'll throw it out generally to anybody. A situation where the coach is on the opposing team has tried to throw every rule at you to say, well, how come this? How come this on any of these kind of trick plays?
Every once in a while, they might declare, you know, that such a trick play is illegal. Usually, it's trying to work the official to see if they can throw the official off and make them think twice about a rule. You know, we had number 76 line up in the backfield, and he took a handoff and ran 5 yards for a first down, and the defensive coach went ballistic saying he couldn't do that. Well, no, he could. But he didn't report. There's no reporting in high school football. You know, he can take a handoff. He can run with it. He just can't go out for a pass, and he can't catch a forward pass. That's all there is to it. So coaches might put on a little display to try and make the referee second-guess themselves. And honestly, they might just be embarrassed that they got fooled.
Well, then there's a good point buried in there as well, which is, you know, this player did not report. And there could be plenty of situations where they see a nifty play on a Sunday, and then they try and run that on a Friday night. So, and I'm sure that has come up in a bunch of your situations where it's two different rule sets.
I think two of the big ones, you know, one, I think with all the freshman games that I do, there's always at least one ear who tells us about a play about a tackle reporting eligible. And it's like, I can't do that. The other one is the fake field goal where they flip it from their knees, which in high school you have to get up. And so that's another one.
One that I see, not necessarily a trick play, but a confusion between the two rule sets. at the high school level, assisting the runner is defined differently than it is at the NFL level. So, you know, everyone sees Philadelphia and these other teams that are running these plays where they can get right behind the quarterback on a quarterback wedge and just two-hand push them right in or right over the line to gain. But at the high school level, you can't do that. So there have been, just like going back to the pre-games with the coaches, that's whenever I white hat a game, that's something I also work into my pre-game. Are you aware? And this has come in since the popularity of the plays that Philadelphia runs. It's, are you aware of the NFHS rules regarding assisting the runner? That is a new thing that we work into our pre-games because of the Philadelphia Eagles, because we've seen it come up a handful of times where at the high school level, you can neither push nor pull the runner. We say you can push the pile. If a scrum or a pile has formed around the runner, you can push that pile. But the moment the white hat, because the referee is primary on it, if you see two hands or a shoulder being driven into the back of the runner, we always say we look for two hands on the numbers. It can go for a shoulder as well, but we're gonna call assisting the runner. So again, not a trick play, but something that, you know, the two rule books differ on in terms of their definitions. And, you know, the kids see it on Sundays and they want to do it on Friday night. And sometimes the coaches don't know any different. That's why we tell them now in pregame. We ask them if they know the difference.
And that's an interesting one that you would mention, assisting the runner, which, thanks to quirky research, the last we found it was called in, I believe, 1991, the last time. And then it was declined anyway. So then it's just not called that often. They did originally have in the rules that said push or pull, but more of the enforcement and kind of like in the margin notes, officials, as you said, they would not penalize pushing a scrum. But then it wasn't anything explicitly as to pushing that runner in that scrum either. They were more looking at, okay, this guy's about to fall over, and then you pushed him up and got him back up on his feet. Just basically things that wouldn't happen too terribly often. But yeah, in the NFL, it really comes down to a pull. It has to be a pull. And there's been a few things that have even come up in the last couple of years that they did want it to be called aiding the runner or assisting the runner, but had not been called. So any other of those weird rule changes that we have encountered between the NFL and some of the lower levels?
Well, the best thing that the NFHS did in the last couple of years was put the tackle box in for intentional grounding, because now we don't have to hear about that every Friday.
So let me switch gears now, and this is something that you would not see on your Friday game, which is replay. And there were just a couple of things, three things actually, that did come up this weekend, starting with Thursday, so the long weekend. We started off with a situation where replay, the way the system's set up now, they get all of the camera angles, or at least most of the camera angles, fed directly into the system. Now, once you get to the Super Bowl, there's only so many that they can take in. So they do rely on what's aired, but they stick with the primary ones. And it goes all the way down to, I believe there's 9 at some of the lower level, not widely distributed regional games. But you can have upwards of 20 on a prime time game and more. And some of them have pylons. Some of them have line to gain pylons. And every sort of variation from there. But one of the hiccups in the system just showed itself, because they were at break when replay was going over everything. Now, presumably they can see the feed that's coming from the truck. So even though we're in commercial, they're still transmitting from the truck. And Terry McCauley, the rules analyst, he's actually at the NBC Sports Studio in Connecticut. So he's not ever on site, so he has to get these images sent to him. And when they came back from the commercial, he said yeah, I think that they touched the ball, and here's a zoomed in shot, and you can see that. So they quickly did an announcement. They only give about 15 or 20 seconds before they're getting back into the play if there's a commercial break. And if the TV doesn't come back in time to hear the announcement, they'll just go right into the play. What wound up happening is they just didn't see it in the command center. And we had the zoomed in angle that clearly and obviously showed that there was a touch of punt. And to their credit, they did come forth and say, yeah, we missed that one. So there is that plus. But on the other hand, we do have this miss in the mix here.
So I would say one thing. This is a limitation, in my opinion. This was changed back in, I believe it was the 2017 offseason, when the replays were changed from the traditional under-the-hood booths to the Surface tablets. And I was actually at one of the preseason rules presentations, training camp rules presentations, and the referee there was discussing it. One of the members of the media had mentioned that, you know, it was known that they were going to be getting rid of the booths and moving to the tablets. And it was kind of mentioned as an afterthought by the referee who was doing that press conference, who said, oh, and now we don't even have to wait for TV to come back from commercial. We can announce the ruling during commercial and then just move on and get the game going. And now we've had that for, what is that, 7 seasons now. And I feel like that is a limitation, because before, and you used to see it, sometimes on the field they wouldn't know the, I call them the orange sleeves, the TV communicator on the field, hasn't told the referee, oh, we're back from commercial, you can come out now and make your announcement. Sometimes we would see referees on TV just standing there, just waiting for someone to tell them to go. So tying it back to this past Thursday, you know, I feel like that's a limitation of that, wanting to get the ruling out and to keep the game moving. I understand wanting to keep the game moving, but you can only think about if this play had happened back when it was the days of under the hood and you waited to announce until the time came to come back from commercial and then give the ruling. Who knows if they were waiting around, they would have been able to say, hey, bring the white hat back. We have another angle, because that's happened before. We've seen that happen before in those days. They like to say, oh, there's a 60-second time. Sometimes, you know, as we all know, in those days, there were times where it took longer than that. So that's one thing that jumped out to me, because I remember being in that press conference and hearing that and saying, I don't know how I feel about that. At the time, I felt that. And I personally think that it's one of those limitations, a limitation to that change.
You know, one thing I think is that one of the reasons they moved it to New York is that they're supposed to be this, you know, state-of-the-art replay center, that they are not reliant on TV trucks anymore to get the angles they want. And I just think it's a bad look for the NFL to have to come out and say, we didn't see this. I mean, to your point, Cam, sometimes, you know, they are trying to get the game flow and get the game moving, and maybe they didn't look as close as they needed to, but it just isn't a good look.
Especially when the fans at home are seeing that. When the fans at home can see that the ball was touched and New York doesn't have that angle, to the casual fan and even to us, it kind of doesn't make total sense. If we're able to see it right away and we're able to hear commentary on it by, you know, Al Michaels, Kirk Herbstreit, and when McCauley came on, if we can hear that commentary and see that angle, why can't New York see it? So I understand the frustration of, you know, the fans that may not know the full ins and outs of how replay works in terms of receiving those angles from TV.
Right. And this was a stands, right? This wasn't even an overturn, which it should have been, right? You could understand them going quickly if something is obvious, but you'd think they would take a little more time on something where it was like, okay, there's no definitive view, but clearly there was. And it still baffles me, Ben, when you stated that every stadium is different and they get different angles depending on the game. And I think that would be something, I don't know if every fan knows this, but to me as a fan, that's shocking to me that a multi-billion dollar industry that is the NFL doesn't have a standardized sort of set of cameras at every venue, every game.
Well, and that was one of the things that a couple of years ago, I believe it was a Patriots game, it got flexed from Sunday night to an afternoon game. And there was a boundary call in there. And I remember tweeting out, had this game stayed on Sunday night, we would have had a more definitive call on this, because it would have been a better angle on this particular play. So even in that situation, yeah, there is a little bit of an inequity built in there. and that's just going to be part of the system. There is some reporting we're working on that there might be a little bit of change coming on that. So it's just a little tease to keep an eye on the website there. And just quick into the mechanics of that, what they have called a double stop is what they could have called. Basically, the ruling is issued. They see something show up on the screen before the snap. Now, again, they got back to the ready to play very quickly. That's the TV broadcasting arm weighing in on the officiating, saying, hey, we want to get the announcement and let's get back to football. That's a little something that's outside of officiating's hands there. But anywhere up to that snap, they could have that they got another angle. They'll shut it down before that snap happens and then issue an expedited review. They won't go back under the tablet for that second review, but they will do that as a double stop. On top of that, there is somebody, there's a third person in the booth that's a video operator, and one of their responsibilities is to monitor not only the clock, they're jotting down times all throughout and kind of taking care of the bookkeeping, but they're also listening to what's going on in the truck and what the broadcast is saying. And if they hear something like, well, we really think this was touched, look, we have a zoomed in angle, that's the first thing that video operator has to do is let the replay official know about that, because they don't have an ear on the broadcast. They're listening to more what the crew is saying. We had another unusual one where we had the expiration of the third quarter, and there was another for the Raiders, combined with an ineligible downfield, which can be reviewable, but in this particular case, it was not. Visually, it looked like we had the quarter had come to an end prior to the snap. But again, this is another one of these technological leaps where they have the clock wired right into the system. So now the question is, who's got the right information? So the replay center apparently saw that it was either just right, it was a bang-bang situation, or that they actually had a better time code on it. And then on top of that, don't forget to wear the white shoes on Sunday, because we had one call where we don't know if the runner's out or not, because the boundary's white, the shoe is white, and it was close enough that they went with a stand. But this is one of the things. I mean, we have new leadership there. We have Mark Butterworth, who's been an outstanding replay official. And yeah, all right. So there's some rookie bumps in here, and that's one of those situations where a situation like this happens once, and you kind of gather the troops together and you say, all right, we just cannot allow that to happen again. So it happened in the game where it did not impact the outcome of it. So the lessons are learned and you move forward. But so there was the admission, as well, as I pointed out earlier, that they're being a little more transparent and saying, hey, yeah, we did mess this up.
You know, one of the things, kind of getting back to, you know, learning new things and the inequity of some of these games, you know, one thing I've noticed a few times this year on some of these, like, Sunday night games or Monday night games, when they have that line of gain pylon cam, is on short plays, you can see the line of scrimmage official very intentionally working around it to make sure that it has the view. Just something else to get used to. But you know, I think there's sometimes an idea that, you know, officials don't like replay. Whereas if you talk to almost any official involved in these processes, you know, I've had one experience with replay. I mean, replay is a great tool, and everyone likes, I mean, I shouldn't say everyone, but anyone, almost anyone you talk to likes having that backup and just getting plays right.
Okay, and with that wraps up another episode of the First and 25 podcast. Thanks to Pat Weber, Chris Soibert, Cam Philippe, Mark Schultz. I'm Ben Ostro. We'll be dropping a new episode every Tuesday throughout the season, and please spread the word. If you're listening on the Football Zebras website, you can find us on your preferred podcasting app, and please subscribe. Many thanks for listening.